Welcome to the Drone You, Ask a Drone You podcast. My name is Paul Aiken, and I'm the chief pilot here at Drone You, here to give you the best tips, tricks, and expert advice to make sure you are getting the best photos and videos you can from your drone. Today, I just wanted to go over what is Drone You and what is the point of our podcast, because this is really the place for you to learn as much as you can. You know, if you're on the road, if you don't have time to listen to, you know, any of our recorded webinars, or maybe you haven't made the jump into membership yet into Drone You. And that's the beauty of podcasts, is the fact that we have the opportunity to give you great information, and for you, it's free. So what better way to learn? Here at Drone You, we teach everyone how to fly. We teach people the advanced applications utilizing everything from 3D point clouds and DSMs to orthomosaics, but also teaching you the flight techniques, tips and tricks to get great footage, like flying through fences, flying real estate, flying indoors. You know, whether you're new to drones or just starting out as an enthusiastic hobbyist, or maybe you're the guy trying to make some money, well, Drone You is here for you. Budget or not, we have classes and everything that you need to take that step into commercialization. So today, what are we going to go over? Well, you know, one of the things that our students have been talking about and have been asking about is, how do I remove the fisheye effect from my GoPro? Now, the Phantom series of drones is the most popular from DJI and also the most popular amongst our students. So I wanted to go over a little bit about, you know, how can we remove this fisheye effect? And some people have said, you know, I can do it in GoPro Studio, but then I gotta move my photo over to Photoshop, and then I gotta do this, and the workflow, frankly, isn't there. So today I am going to bring on my buddy Vic Moss from Moss Photography in Denver, and he is going to show us, or tell us, I should say, how we can remove the fisheye effect in Photoshop without a plugin. You know, a lot of my friends have been using plugins, and they've been using many different things in Photoshop. And what I have to say about what you're about to learn is the fact that there is no plugin. It's so easy. I mean, you're maybe gonna, you could even set this up autonomously in Photoshop to do automatically on your photos. If you don't know how to set up autonomy in Photoshop, don't worry. It's only gonna take you about 20 to 30 seconds to learn this anyway. I'm here today with Vic Moss from Moss Photography, based out of Denver, Colorado. Vic has been very well known not only for his capability of flight, but also for his composition of photos. World-renowned, and has won numerous awards for his photography for architecture. Vic, thank you so much for your time today. I just want to say welcome, and we are all excited to hear what you have to say about photography, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very welcome, sir. So we've talked a lot about, you know, what we want to go over today and how we want to essentially teach these guys not only the technical aspects of photography, but also, you know, the more, I would say, the relationship between the technical aspects to create eye-catching images. So, you know, Vic, you know what I want to talk about today, so let's just jump right into it and let's go through it. Tell us why your photos are so good.
Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not a very good pilot, so I want to get that out of the way right away.
All right. Well, thanks for being
here. Which is one of the reasons I'm with you guys. So, I shoot stills. I don't shoot video. So, with piloting skills aren't as necessary for what I'm doing right now, but I want them to get better. So that's what I'm doing. As far as photography, gosh, where do I start? It's developed, obviously, over 25 years, 26 years, and you just have to understand how light and shadow interplay to make depth in a photograph, because you're basically taking a three-dimensional scene and getting depth out of the shot visually and turning it into a two-dimensional photograph. So you really have to pay attention to the light and the shadow, the way it plays against each other to make images pop, make objects pop off the image.
So
to give it depth and stuff.
So let me ask you this question. What do you think is the most important as far as collecting images for aerial guys, the guys that either need to rely on the sun via, you know, the golden hour, as we would call it, or, and also, are you using any artificial light to take your photos? I've heard of some guys that fly a few LEDs underneath their drone right before they take a photo to get that full effect. So what do you think as far as light and shadow, how that would affect the aerial guy?
It pretty much would be the same way. The easiest way to do this is to tell you what some people do wrong. And a lot of the problems I've seen with some of the drone images, which could be a good image, is they shoot with the sun directly behind them, and it's totally flat. So that really creates some problems when you're shooting stills. With the video, you've got the motion to create that depth, but with stills, you just flat don't have it. So you're sitting there with your FPV, and you're watching your bird fly around up there. It's like, oh, I can see the depth, and then your GoPro goes black when it takes the picture. You don't have that depth anymore because you're just getting one image in that time frame. So that's probably the best way to do it. But aerial photography, just like photography on the ground, is you're going to have to use all kinds of different things, like leading lines, and use the color to your advantage or disadvantage. You can get rid of color as well, and try not to put everything right smack dab in the middle of the shot.
Yeah.
Although there are times in aerial photography that's exactly what you need to do.
That, you know, it's so true. So now for the guys that are shooting or are new to photography and using, say, a GoPro or using a Phantom Vision Plus, when you say leading lines, how could you help someone understand the premise behind that?
Leading lines are something that will direct your eye across the photograph. You think of it as driving down a very flat area, let's say Eastern Plains here at Colorado, or the desert, or the entire state of Texas. Sorry for anybody from Texas. But if you're driving down the road, you've got your road in front of you, you have telephone lines beside you, and you've got the horizon point in the distance. If that were a photograph instead of a moving picture, the road would be leading right to the middle of the photograph. The power lines would be leading right to the middle of the photograph, and that's what is leading lines. Leading lines will take you from the outside of the photograph to the inside of the photograph, or even throughout the photograph. That's what a leading line is.
Okay, cool. I think that's definitely easy to understand. But you said also, again, we never want to take photos with the sun at our back. And as you said that, I'm sitting here thinking, oh man, I think I am. I think I've done that a few times.
Well, first of all, never is never use the word never.
Okay.
When you're describing photography, because for every single rule, you can break it. There have been plenty of times where I've taken shot behind me with the sun behind me, and sometimes you just have to. There's a shot you need. You can be there at a certain time, and that time you need to be there is when the sun is not the greatest. Then you have to rely on some other techniques to actually make it work a little bit better.
True.
But for the most part, if you want that depth in your shot, you have to use shadow form. That'll bring texture and bring depth into the photograph.
Cool. So now, Vic, tell us, what do you shoot with on the ground, and what do you shoot with in the sky?
On the ground, I'm an Icon snob, so I shoot, and have been for obviously almost 30 years now. I shoot
for obviously
800,
30 years.
Yeah, D800 and D600.
Okay.
Soon to be upgraded. I'll be upgrading both of those probably next summer. It's just upgrade cameras every 2 years anyway. And then I've got the trifecta of zoom lenses for the Nikon. I've got 14 to 24 full frame, 24-70, and 70 to 210. I'm sorry, 200. Along with TC Telecover, and that's basically what I shoot with. I used to shoot all large format and medium format digital, and it just got to the point where it was time to replace all that, and I didn't feel like dropping $50,000 on a camera system. So
you just went full frame Nikon.
Frame Nikon.
Cool,
yep.
Cool. Now, are any of your lenses optically stabilized?
They are, but I don't use them. Okay. I very rarely use them because I shoot off tripod anyway.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. You don't really shoot architecture handheld.
Gotcha.
Which
okay.
is what I shoot.
Cool, very cool.
Yeah.
So now, what are you flying, or I guess, what are you flying, what camera are you putting in the sky?
A Phantom P2 with a 3D, Zenmuse H3 3D, and GoPro.
And you used to be a Phantom Vision Plus guy, is that right?
Nope. The bird I have now is the same bird I started with the exception of the new body. I had to put on it after a hard landing. But, that ended up pretty good. But, I've got the same one, and the only thing I've upgraded is the Zenmuse I upgraded, and I've also upgraded to the GoPro 4, although I haven't used it yet in the air yet. So, still getting more comfortable with that photograph, or with that camera.
Gotcha. There are so many options with the GoPro, and you know what I tell people is, if you really want photos and a wide variety of photos to choose from, instead of using like the Phantom Vision Plus where you're controlling the camera with your phone, we have less options when you're flying a GoPro. So I really like to just kind of set it on a timer and let it take a photo either every 1 or 5 seconds. And
I do 5. If you do 1 and you're flying FPV, you don't have a whole lot of time that you can see your image because the screen goes black when the shutter goes off.
Have you done your
software?
At least
not mine. I've got the FlySight.
You got okay. So, if you update the GoPro, that should stop.
Oh really?
Yep.
I might have to look into that though. But it also but I'm not sure I want to, because let me tell you why. That way I know when I've taken the photograph.
The way that I know it's taking a photograph is the icon on the FPV on the upper left-hand corner changes from camera to like a film camera.
Oh, okay. So. Well, that's good enough. There you go.
But, right, you know what? We're always learning from each other, and I think that's such a good point to make.
It is. It's cool.
Yeah, I love this community. It's so great. And Vic, I just want to say thank you for all the help that you have given and all the advice that you have given to people. You're one of the few people, along with Peter and a couple of others, that I really trust, and I trust your knowledge. So.
Cool.
That being said, we've talked a little bit about camera positioning when it comes to, where the sun is. We've had a conversation, we're going to be talking about it a lot today in class, about how we price things, and I'm going to start out class today with talking about real estate pricing, because I think it's the easiest entry point into the market.
I think that's probably where most people do. The people who are just getting into this probably are starting with the real estate guys.
Yeah, and I agree, and I'm going to go over the approach and how I price things. But when it comes to real estate, I've filmed so many houses that I've got it kind of down. I've got my pricing down kind of pat. And what I do is I offer 3 different packages, and I really kind of jack up the price of the third package and offer all of the things in the third package for the second package price. But my goal the entire time is to sell them on the package 2 price, whether I give them the full kit and caboodle of the full package or just what comes in the second package is all pretty much based on how much I like the realtor, but that's between you and I. Now, that being said, when it comes to pricing things outside of real estate, you have a different way of going about it, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is you believe in the creative fee and not creating, when we're shooting things other than real estate and we charge a day rate, you don't like that because you think it creates a commodity. So tell me your thought process on that. Tell me, what you've learned in the past and why you've come to this conclusion.
Well, I've changed the way I write my invoices from day rate to creative fee. Because to me, day rate means you're going to be there a day. So if you bid out a job on the day rate of your standard day rate, whatever that is, you get on the shoot and you only take 5, 6, 7 hours. The client, if they're not a really good client, will come back and say, well, you weren't there a whole day, so why am I still having to pay a day rate? And so I just completely eliminated that variable and say, well, this is my creative fee. This is what it should take. But, either way, I'm creating the same amount of stuff. It's good for me if I create it faster. it's good for you if it takes me a little bit longer. Well, it's not necessarily good for them, but it doesn't hurt them if I take a little bit longer. And so I just totally got rid of my day rate. Now, it's based on a day's work, but I don't use the, you know, I don't use the word.
But you call it, you call it a creative fee.
It's creative fee. Yep.
So, now, how do you? Now, how do you explain the creative fee to your clients when they ask you, when you hand them an invoice?
And what? Creative fee.
It's just creative fee. That's all it says. There's no subtext under that. Just creative fee.
No, creative fee is just how it's billed. It's just what it says, and it'll say, you know, one creative fee at X, whether it's a full day, half day. I've got a client that I charge basically a double day rate for, because of the usage, and it's my day rate is blank. You know, it might not. I'm trying to think what my invoices look like, because I never look at them. I just push the buttons and hit send. just really will say like 2 day rates. I'm sorry, not 2 day rates. It'll take creative fee 2, and then it'll give a total.
So let me ask you this, Vic. What software are you using to send invoices?
I use something called Hindsight. It's a photography specific program that I've used since I got my first Mac. Holy critical. When was the Mac SE? When did that come out? When's the big That's what I started with, was the old Mac SE, you know, the floppy disk drive. And the guy who developed it used to be a Denver photographer. He's moved to New York since, but I knew him, I liked his software, and I bought it, and I've used it ever since.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at the website right now, and it looks pretty good, but it looks like there's a pretty heavy startup fee.
Pardon?
I said it looks like there's a pretty heavy startup fee.
Really?
$795.
For that?
Yeah.
Well, I've had it so long that I didn't have a startup fee. Well, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. It all runs off the ProView system. That you know, that's all the background running it. But yeah, I don't know what Jim does now. But like I said, I've used it for so long that I just don't, you know, there's no creative fee when I started it.
And you know, I think this is something that some of the guys who are, you know, younger in the whole process may want to know is, what is, you know, the best software or the easiest software to use when it's coming to creating and tracking invoices? And I have to say, you know, Square has developed so much in the last few years. But at the same time, I haven't used it enough on the invoice side to truly know whether it's reliable or not.
I do have a Square account, SquareUp, but I've just used it. You know, I've done a handful of art shows with some of my fine art stuff, and I like it. And I wouldn't use it for a business thing, but some people do. But that's just me. I'm a pretty conservative business guy, so you know, I don't, you know, I've got it the way I like it, the way I want to use it, and so that's what I'll do until I'm done.
See, I think that's great, and I have to say, I used Square for a very long time in a business that I owned before this, so you know, it may be the way to go for some that are just starting up, but I would say, you know, make sure that you understand whatever software you're using, that it actually delivers what you need it to deliver.
Right.
And don't...
I do know that Square, you can do, you know, you can use on your iPad or your iPhone, or I think the other stuff now too. It was just Mac stuff when it first came out. And if you're shooting real estate, that's instrumental. Because if you're shooting real estate, from what I heard, I've never shot real estate, not with a drone anyway. You know, these guys, you need the payment then and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you've got, you know, here, let me have your credit card, you know, you whip it out, you run it through your little either with Google, I think, has one now too, but if you're using Square, you just run it through your little white thing plugged into your phone, it pops up, you know, with your email address, stick their email address in there, sends them a receipt, and it puts it in your bank account the next day.
That's what I love about Square, is the fact that it's so fast to deposit. To deposit funds. I absolutely love it. All right, Vic, well, let's get back into the questions. So when it comes to post-processing, mm-hmm. we've talked a little bit about position of the photo, but what about things as far as like aperture and ISO and white balance, you know, kind of as it pertains to obtaining the right shot? What is, you know, the best case scenario that we're looking for? And when I say this, I know a lot of guys are shooting on their GH4s, they're setting up their manual exposure at F11, and, you know, I got to tell you, when I fly my Sony camera, I'm always shooting, you know, I mean, I'm shooting at different times of the day, but I'm normally shooting at either F2.8 or F3.5.
Well, now again, we're talking still, because I'm the still guy, you're the video guy.
That's true.
When it comes to cameras, especially DSLRs, wide open is not the sharpest aperture. There's a sweet spot in most lenses, and this has been years and years. It's always been this way. When you shut the aperture down far enough, where it's usually F8 or F11, somewhere in there, that is the most crisp. Now we're talking the difference between, well, it's a very small difference as far as crispness of the image. But if you're shooting wide open too, especially if you're shooting with a wide-angle lens, there's a chance you'll also have some edge sharpness issues.
Okay.
Even on the best lenses, you'll have edge sharpness issues. With my $1,500, $1,800 Nikon lens, you know, if I'm shooting wide open, there's a good chance I'm going to have some sharpness issues in the edge.
Meaning, when you say sharpness issues in the edge, you meaning that the edges of your frame are
not... Edges of the photograph will not be as sharp.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So we're looking for that sweet spot for the still, normally between F8 and F11, depending on which camera you're shooting with, which lens. So mm-hmm. it's definitely specific, and I want to make
it's
sure
it's lens specific. It is lens specific. Of all my lenses, you know, each one is real close to the same, and I'm always shooting at F11 anyway. It's just my workflow. I'll just lock F11 down on my lenses, to be quite honest, for the most part. But F11 on my lenses is just crystal clear, and 16 if I have to sometimes, depending on the depth I'm trying to carry in a scene.
So, all right, let's talk about some of your photos here. So,
sure.
I am going to go to EX1 after an EX1 before. And
okay.
First of all, tell us which program you're using for post-processing.
One probably none of you have.
Okay.
Sorry. It's called Capture One. Some people do have it. It's actually put out by Phase One, the people who put the who my medium format digital system was from. It's not terrible. I think it's $300.
Hmm.
So it's really not that expensive. That's my processing engine.
Okay.
When I bought my Phase One, I got the system with it. If you just buy it, buy the software, you can buy the software. But if you buy a system from them, you know, you spend $35,000 on a camera, they give you the software.
Yeah.
So I love it. I feel like, you know, it's in my opinion, it's the best processing engine out there. And it's not just my opinion; it's a number of opinions. It doesn't mean Lightroom doesn't suck, or it doesn't mean Lightroom sucks. It's also a really good system. But Lightroom. When I started this, it was 2005 when I switched over to digital. So when I started, Adobe didn't have the processing engines that I needed.
Really?
It didn't work. Yeah. No, they weren't there. They were the post-processing side. It's not the actual processing of the raw image, or in a GoPro's case, processing of a JPEG. Because you can process a JPEG. But you pull up, you know, I pull this stuff up, and that's where I do my white balance. That's where I do my shadow.
Well, I will say I've checked out Capture One, and mm-hmm. it is $300 to buy, but it, also for the new guys, if you don't have that kind of money,
right.
It's $10 a month to be able to use it, and it supports images from over 300 cameras,
mm-hmm.
including Phase One, Canon, Fuji, Nikon, Leica, Sony.
Leica. Are you talking about Capture?
Yeah, I'm talking about Capture
okay.
One. And I'll tell you this, you know, I haven't used Lightroom much either, actually. In fact, I switched between two different photo editing softwares depending on which look I'm going for.
Right.
I use a program called Aperture, and I use a program called Photoshop, I'm sure you've heard of a few times.
I've, yeah. Now, I use with you know, I have Lightroom because I have the entire creative suite.
Okay.
Mine is not $10 a month. I'm paying a monthly fee for all that stuff. But then again, this is my profession, and that's just how it works.
Yeah, and, you know, I have the whole creative suite as well. I'm using the CS6 version, though.
Yeah, I'm the latest, whatever that is.
Yeah, I'm not...
2015, I don't even know what it is. It says, you need to update, I push them and say, okay, update.
Okay,
Just, I don't need that brain damage.
Yeah, I feel ya.
So,
I do not want to update my Lightroom. I just opened
it. I process, you know, get back to what we were originally talking about, though. I process my JPEGs. I know that sounds weird, but I do. I process my JPEGs in Capture. And I may process the same JPEGs different ways, like to pull the highlights out of one or the shadows out of another. And then I import everything into Photoshop. So all of my post-processing, editing, fisheye correction, all that stuff is done in Photoshop. So, and whether it's Express or the Creative Suite, I think in Express you can do a lot of stuff as well. Or Photoshop, is it Photoshop Express, isn't it?
I'm not really too sure what it is.
There's a Photoshop you can buy. It's like $100. It's not the Photoshop CS version or the CC version. It's basically Photoshop Lite, but I can't remember what they call it. It's an Adobe product, and then you can buy that, and you can do a lot of the same stuff in that. As long as you've got layers, if you can do layers, you can do anything.
Yeah, that's true. I think layers are definitely, you know,
layers
crucial.
Are your friend. Layers are your friend.
Layers are your friend, he says.
Yep.
So, yeah, I totally agree. All right, Vic, well, we've gone over a little bit about the software. We've gone over a little bit about the relationship between different technical aspects of the camera. What shots do you think really put the perspective of aerial videography or aerial photography, what perspective makes a difference? And here's what I'm trying to say. You know, I see a lot of guys out there that are shooting aerial work and they're, you know, just doing the same thing. You know, they go up 50, 100 feet, they move forward, they move to the side, and then they get a shot maybe of a small reveal utilizing the pan control or the tilt control depending on which controller you're using. And that being said, to me, I think you can tell a novice pilot from someone who's actually really experienced in the fact that the experience movement or the camera movements, and I'm talking about video here, the camera movements are much more complex. They're, what's the right word? You can tell that it takes not only framing, but great camera movement as well as great platform movement. And all of those things kind of together to create more complex stories of motion. So what would you say is the key indicator between a novice and someone who really does great photos? Or, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the question I'm going for here.
You're talking still, right?
I'm talking still, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times what people do is it's all about a different angle of view, which it is. You know, you put your drone up in the air, and you have an angle of view that people haven't had before. But that'll only work for so long. You have to be a photographer first and a pilot second.
Gotcha.
The drone is just another tool. You'll get some neat shots, say, look what I did, this is awesome. And it will be, because you've never seen it before. But the next time you see that shot, it's just a photograph. You know, you have to have a good photograph for a base. So it's got to be more than just throwing the thing up in the air and watching the GoPro go off every 5 seconds. You got to know what you want to shoot, what you want to show, and how to get it. I mean, I know it's hard to explain exactly how to get that perfect shot, because sometimes you can't.
Yeah, that's totally true. That's totally true. So,
and you don't want to just throw it up as high as you can and take a picture.
Yeah.
Like if I'm shooting.
And that's my point. I think the lower, more dynamic perspectives do better.
Uh-huh. It depends. In the pool shot you and I were talking about earlier, that's not even above the treetops. That's example 4. It's, you know, that. Go ahead.
So in example four, and I will make sure to put this in the presentation, we've got to kind of wrap it up here. In example four, it looks like you've kind of jacked up the aperture on your shadows, and...
Not the aperture, the detail.
Excuse me, Grandmaster. So how about this? Why don't you just go ahead and tell us the difference between the before photo and the after photo?
Okay. With the before, you can see that it's kind of dull. Definitely has some blocked up shadows. But if you look at it closely, you can see, well, there is some shadow detail in there. When you're shooting stills, remember last week you said when you're shooting video, you want to go a little brighter. It's just the opposite in still. In stills, you want to shoot a little darker.
Okay.
So if you're shooting with a GoPro, you want to back it off a little bit at whatever, you know, I don't know, they do halves or thirds or whatever they are. Not quite a full stop, but whatever it is, either a half or two-thirds of a stop. Because in still photography, the image is clipped, which means you can't see beyond a certain amount one way or the other. Once the image is clipped in highlights, you can't bring them back. If the image is clipped in shadows, a lot of times you can bring those back.
Gotcha.
So if the highlight's gone in your image, it's gone. You can't bring it back.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I've had problems with that. So on this image in post, what adjustments did you make to give it this more kind of dynamic, and it has a lot more contrast as well?
Right. Well, I've processed it a couple, probably three different ways on this.
Okay.
I don't save all my processes because I already have 7 or 8 external hard drives.
Yeah.
Because of the volume I shoot. But when I'm looking at this, I'd say I processed it three different ways. Some to bring in the shadow, some to bring up the saturation.
Okay.
And just a standard one. So then I'll import all those into Photoshop and play with them a little bit. I'll start with the standard one. I kind of like the way it looks, but the shadow's dark, so I'll bring the one where the shadow's brighter, more detail in the shadow. I'll bring it in on top of it in a layer in Photoshop. And then I'll use a masking tool, and I'm probably going to get pretty technical here, but use a masking tool and then paint that shadow back in on that next layer. And with usually when I'm dealing with saturation, it's usually to bring a sky in or, you know, something along those lines. In this particular instance, I used some saturation issues with the pool and that red, orange, burnt orange, whatever, umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And the orange of the building there, and that, these are shot in San Diego. Obviously, we don't have a whole lot of palm trees here in Colorado.
Yeah.
But and then you come in, and then you, on this one, I didn't even get rid of all the fisheye. I got rid of some of it. You look at it, you know, and then in the unprocessed one,
so
the raw one. No, it's not raw, but
which program are you using, or which plugin should I say are you using? Which program and plugin are you using?
I don't use plugins. I don't like them. But it is all Photoshop. It's all done in Photoshop.
So Photoshop right now.
Okay.
Well, on the recording, you'll hear my external hard drive starting up.
I'll pull up Photoshop while we're doing this too, because I do it so fast with so many different shortcuts that sometimes I have to stop and think, okay, now what do I do?
Yeah. And when people are explaining it to me, I kind of have to have it up and kind of follow their.
Totally.
Yeah. So I'll pull up a photo that I know for a fact has awful fisheye in it.
Mm-hmm. I just did the same thing.
Give me a second. Let me find
no
one. It's take.
Yeah,
it's
I've got an SSD in my MacBook. So it flies.
Mine's live too. I'm just going through some photos that I think that could really use the fisheye effect. And I've been taking so many photos now with my Sony that there's no fisheye effect, which is awesome. So.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to upgrading that one these days.
You know, that new gimbal that comes out for the A7, here, perfect example of one that we can use. The new gimbal for the A7, I'm very, very, very excited for, because I think the A7 really takes it above and beyond. All right, so I've got my photo up, and in fact, I'm going to screen record this really quick. Give me a second. Let me pull up a quick time.
Wish I could see your screen.
I know. Sorry, dude.
That's okay.
Quick time player, screen recording.
So we'll just do this sort of like, you know, a standard Photoshop hold on, I'll walk you through a Photoshop fisheye removal.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, cool. Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready. I was born ready.
There you go. So what you do is you've got your image on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Photoshop open. You've got your tools on the left. You've got your, you know, however you have your Photoshop set up. Some people put them on the right. Some people put them on the left. I like the left. But anyway, so across the top up here, you've got, you know, Photoshop, edit, or file, edit, image, blah, 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 blah. You want to go to filter. So you click on filter, you drop down menu.
Okay.
So from the drop-down menu, you go to, depending on which version you have, somewhere in there will say lens correction.
Let's see, convert to smart filter, adaptive wide-angle lens correction. Okay.
Go on, lens correction. Click on lens correction, you get a dialog box.
Yeah, I see that. I've never seen this before. Okay.
There you go. Now, you have a couple different ways to do this. The easiest way to do it, especially for real estate when you don't have the budget to sit there and schmutz with the thing forever,
uh-huh.
You've got two tabs. You've got auto-correct and you've got custom on the right, correct?
Auto, yeah, uh-huh.
Yep. So, you're on your auto-correct. Click geometric distortion.
It's already on, okay.
Okay. I have mine set as off, so mine is default off. So anyway, because I don't do automatic.
Now, I want to make a point, guys, here. I love the fact that he uses the auto-correction, but if you don't have GoPro as an option in your auto-correction, you can go to custom right away. But the big point that I really want to make here is not necessarily the auto-correction versus the custom correction. The big important part is don't forget to click auto-scale image. It's down underneath the automatic tab, and the reason it's so absolutely important is whether you're doing custom correction or auto-correction, you need auto-scale enabled to get a good picture. So we're gonna continue on and listen up.
So, and they've got another box below there that says search criteria. And you have a camera make in there. And mine will pull it up automatically that it's a GoPro.
Really?
Yep. And so then you have camera model. So you have a menu there. So you pull up, you click on that, and this was shot with a 3 Plus Black Edition. So I click on 3 Plus Black Edition. And now, the lens model doesn't matter on a GoPro, because it's all the same. There's only one lens. So if you click geometric distortion under correction, you got those three boxes up there.
Uh-huh.
You click and unclick it, and you can see what it does. It will actually automatically get rid of the distortion in a GoPro.
You know what? I don't have GoPro on here. It's like Apple.
Oh, you got, oh, that's right. You're running the old one. That's right.
No,
right.
I just think I haven't updated it in so long.
There's a good chance of that. If you have an updated version, it'll have a GoPro setting. So let's say you don't. Fine. Go to the custom tab.
All right, here we go. Custom. Okay.
Custom tab. Now, you've got remove distortion.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do this more than once with the GoPro because there's an awful lot of distortion. So you want to pull that sucker all the way to the right where it says plus 100.
Whoa. Okay, here we go.
Or if you really want to be weird, pull it all the way to the left where it says minus 100 and it looks like somebody threw up in your lens. But go back the other way and you click OK and then come back and do the same thing again. You want to filter, you know, lens distortion, go back to custom, and if I remember correctly, it's going to be about 140. We'll get you really close to where you want to be, maybe even 150. So now your distortion's gone in there. If you don't have the auto-correct for the GoPro, you can go onto your custom tab and remove the distortion that way.
Guys, again, I just want to reiterate the fact, don't forget to hit the auto-scale button underneath the auto tab when you're going into lens correction. It's so important. And this is right in the conversation where I realized I hadn't hit auto-scale. And my photo is just so jacked up. I mean, it looked like someone had taken a cloth and put water all over my photo and then twisted it up. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. So if I'm looking at the geographic distortion, remove distortion, I can go up 100 and minus 100. And you're saying to only go up to 50 at that point?
Well, you already did it 100 once, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're going to go, and it depends on the image because, you know, it technically should be the same every time, which is why I don't like auto.
Mm.
But it will, at times, it might distort, look, it might look funny if it's, all the distortion is taken out of it.
Okay, yeah,
so
it does look
it's usually between 140, 150, but sometimes it'll be 160, sometimes it'll be 130.
Okay.
So if that second time, then you put in a 30 or the 40 or the 60 because you can't go past 100% or plus 100. But while you're in this particular screen, on yours, you should have five little boxes on the left.
Yeah.
One's a distortion, one's a straighten tool. The second one down is a straighten tool.
Yeah.
If you click on that, you get a little plus sign when you put your cursor back over the image.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great time to also fix your horizon. If you've got, you know, let's say it's slightly off, you've got some wind, your gimbal's off just a little bit. If you click on one, let's say the left side of the horizon, and you click and drag, you'll see a little line coming out of the, you hold the click down, so you'll see a little line coming out of the square. So you start that on one side of the horizon, you go to the other side of the horizon, and you put that line where the horizon is, and then you let go, and it automatically fixes the horizon for you.
Ooh, okay, that didn't work for me. Go ahead and say that one more time.
Okay,
let me cancel this out. All right, let's see. Filter, lens correction. Because my photo looks really weird now. It looks like it's been pulled together like a piece of cloth. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And so you're using a GoPro image, right?
Yep.
Okay.
All right, so now I've gotten the straighten tool. Draw a line to straighten the image to a new horizontal and vertical axis. So am
right.
I drawing a straight line, or am I drawing...
What you're drawing is... let's start on the left side, because we're the left to right, you know, society. Start on the left side. Put your cursor where the ground meets the sky at your horizon line.
Okay.
And then click on it. And while you're clicking on it, drag it across to the other side, the right side, where your horizon meets. Assuming you're working with a level horizon.
Assuming I'm working with a level horizon.
Yeah, this is only if your gimbal's messed up, or if it looks funny. Sometimes it'll look.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So if you do that, then as soon as you get over to the right side where you want it to, you see the line is being drawn behind you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as soon as you do that, let go, and your image will level itself out. If your horizon's crooked.
Gotcha.
If your horizon's already crooked, just pretend it's not and draw it like maybe half an inch above it, and you'll see what it does.
Okay.
Just start on the left side, and then go up maybe half an inch above the horizon, and let go, and then it'll think that's supposed to be the horizon. It'll fix the image.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, so now let's say this. Once I'm out of here, now my main image looks really weird. It looks like it's not nearly the same size as the original image. It's about, I would say, one-fifth the size.
One-fifth the size?
Yes, centered in my... centered with... Yeah, it looks like it resized my image down.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is
weird. I wish I knew what was going on your screen, because it shouldn't have anything to do with resizing an image.
Here, I'm going to send you a screenshot so you can see.
You know what might have happened? Let me see here. Did you hit... Let me go back to custom here. There is a... down at the bottom, there's a scale. On the right side, underneath the custom tab, there's a scale. And you want to make damn sure you don't hit that, because if you hit more than 100%, it goes bling.
Okay, so custom, default correction,
mm-hmm.
And then where is that?
All the way at the bottom. The bottom slider is called scale.
Uh-huh.
You want to make sure you didn't hit that.
Yeah, I didn't hit it. Here, I'm going to send you a screenshot.
Okay.
Tell me what you think. Dick Moss. Here we go. Desktop. Boom. All right. Here you're going to see it in 10 seconds. Blop.
Okay.
There it is.
You emailed it to me?
No, I texted it to you. It's going to be on your phone.
Oh, on my phone. Oh, you know what? Let me pull it up on my iPad. That might work a little better.
You can also pull it up on your Mac under messages if you have your accounts linked up.
I don't have it set up that way.
Okay.
I see. Whoa. How the hell did you get there?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
You know what? You went. What the hell did you do? Wow.
Probably shouldn't show this to the students.
I'm thinking not so much.
Let's just restart. Let me just get a whole new image in here.
Yeah, I have no idea what you've done. I think you've actually gone minus.
I don't know,
man. You minus the scale somehow.
No. So here, let's do this.
Okay, you know what? Go back to auto correction. Would you pull it up, the first tab under auto?
Yeah.
Make sure auto scale image is clicked.
Okay. Give me a second.
That's what it did. See, I'm telling you, I don't know how to teach this stuff. Just know how to do it.
It's fine. This is great because everyone's learning right now. So
yeah, so we can start over if you want.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to.
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife just came home for lunch. Let me stay in there real quick. Hang on. Well, since we're starting over anyway.
Yeah, I'm getting another picture, so. All right, give me a photo. Salvador Dali image isn't going to do it.
Not so much.
Okay, here we go. Got the image. Snow-covered mountains. All right, I've got my image. I'm going to go into filter, lens correction.
Filter, lens correction.
Oh, I didn't have auto-scale image on.
There you go.
Okay, auto scale image. Let's just try to do an auto correction real quick. Okay.
You know what? That might be why you didn't have a GoPro, or you might not have a GoPro.
No, I really think it's because.
Nope. Yeah, you don't have GoPro. I didn't click mine. It was still there. So yeah, auto scale image. So since you don't have GoPro, go to custom. And cat's yelling at me. Holy crap.
There's once. I've done it once. I'm doing it again.
Yep.
It works. I'm definitely going to have to do the straighten image. Here, let's...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, no wonder the straighten image wasn't working.
Yeah.
Because it didn't know what to do.
Oh, no. Too much straighten. This is a learning curve for sure. Oh man, pound Z. Come on, no, you can't make that change. Okay, going back. This is a fun time, Vic, I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear it.
All right, so let's shrink this. Okay, that's better. Oh wow, we got a flat horizon line now. Look at that.
There you
That's
go.
Awesome, dude. Wow, success. Okay, I'm going to show you before, I'm going to show everyone after.
Okay.
So, I'm going to send you the after real quick. I'm going to actually send you the before as well. So, here's my before, snow-covered mountains. And now
okay. Oh boy, was your horizon crooked. Okay.
Okay, now this is what we got. Look at that. Look at that.
Well, it's coming. There it goes. See, yeah, there you go. See? Now you've got, you know, you've your horizon straight, your fisheye is gone.
Yeah. Wow, dude. Hey, the students are going to love you. You're going down in GoPro learning history.
I don't know if I go that far, but sure.
Okay.
You know, I would say a really, 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 really good idea.
Okay.
And this is brought over from the dark room. When back in the old ages, the dark ages of the dinosaur, when we were in the dark room, every single print left my dark room was vignetted. And what you do is you bring down the corners of the shot a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And that really helps keep the focus of the shot in. You know, when you want the middle of the shot a little bit brighter than the outside of the shot.
Yeah.
And that's also easy enough to do in Photoshop. So if you can, if you can darken those corners of all the shots, that really helps. Just keep the focus in the photograph rather than have the eye wander off.
Totally, totally, totally.
We can go over that one day if you want, but that's a fairly quick. But you got to use layers and masks, so it depends on how people want to get that.
Yeah. Well, the good news is here is that when we did this the correct way, it only mm-hmm. took 3 minutes to do. Mm-hmm. I was just watching the screen recording.
It's super quick.
Yeah.
And it takes me. I'm working on a GoPro image, and if it's just like a construction shot where I'm not as critical or worried about it, I'm probably 15-20 seconds by the time I set it up to the time it's to the time I've got the distortion out in the horizon right, and then I go into the rest of my post production.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, it smokes because it's just know, it's all shortcuts. You can do all this in shortcuts.
Totally. And I love it. Do you have any suggestions for setting up shortcuts or information on getting shortcuts for Photoshop?
Shortcuts for Photoshop are awesome. All you got to do is you take your cursor, you hold it over your tool, and eventually your shortcut pops up.
Cool.
So if you've got Photoshop open, you put it over there, like let's put it over the stamp tool, and all of a sudden it says clone stamp tool and parentheses is S. So that's how you do that. It's like, oh, okay, hit S, and then, you know, you switch over to this tool. You know, if you want to move the stuff around, you hit P for pointer, or V for move tool, sorry. P is pointer, that's something different. And also, Photoshop will tell you the shortcuts. In Photoshop, like let's say lens correction is option, and this is all Macs. If you're on a PC, or someone's on a PC, it'll be slightly different.
If you're on a PC, you suck. I'm kidding.
I wouldn't go there, but yeah. For me, you know, I don't go file, lens correction, and then, because it's shift, command, R.
Yep.
That's lens correction.
I see that. Shift, command,
R. So that brings up, and so Photoshop is awesome in that it gives you those shortcuts. You don't have to figure out how to make one, because almost every Photoshop action that is used a lot has a shortcut. With one exception, which really makes me mad, and that's flatten image. I use flatten image all the time because I'm working with layers, and I'm done. I want to flatten the whole image, and rather than merge layer, you know, command E, if I've got all these layers open, I just want to say command something and flatten image. So I know I can get in there and make my own shortcuts, but I'm not that good.
Or maybe you just haven't taken the time to figure it out yet.
I haven't taken the time to figure it out.
Yeah, because we all know you're smart.
The stuff I know in Photoshop, I'm damn good at. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean that to sound egotistical, but I am. But I probably utilize 5% of Photoshop. The stuff I don't know.
And I think I'm right there with you. So,
yeah.
Well, on that bombshell, my friend, I'm going to let you go. I've got to finish. I got to kind of create and put all of this into a presentation.
Yeah.
So.
In the next hour and
20 minutes. So, all right, dude. Well, thank you so much for calling
no
in.
Problem.
I really appreciate it.
And I will be there. You know, if somebody has questions that pop up, I'll try and answer them. Obviously, kind of hard in the, in the chat box. But
and we still have to.
Maybe we can sit down and do a little bit more. Maybe we can figure out how to share screens, and I can actually do it from my screen, and you can record it from yours. I know there's some way to do that if you can get your bald-headed bureau.
The bald-headed bureau.
Figure that out for us. I could, you know, you, if you can record my screen on your computer, that would work really well.
Yeah.
And I can go through. You know, I won't go through the Capture One stuff because let's face it, these guys aren't going to have it.
Yeah.
You know, there might be one or two, but the vast majority of them are not going to have it.
Well, you know, one thing that I do want to do is I need to get up to Denver soon anyway to finish a few jobs, and I'll say this. I'd love to do an interview on what you've been doing on the legislative side and the whole process.
Okay, cool.
Because I really hope that through the work that you're doing that you can lead by example to other people in the industry.
Yeah.
For sure.
Cool.
So, all right?
All right.
I will talk to you soon, my friend.
Okay.
Right, bye-bye. If you become a member of DroneU, you would learn things like the correct tilt angle and control gains and the way to properly fly on any Phantom or 3D Robotics vehicle to eliminate the fisheye effect anyway. I welcome you guys to join DroneU. It's a great community. It's a positive community. It's so different from everything that you see on Facebook and the DJI Phantom Owners page. It is such a community that is built up and is focused on each other just really gaining information collectively as a community. I mean, it is so beautiful to see. Frankly, if you want to stay up to date with continuing education, the best tips and tricks, product reviews, and what you need to know for your commercial venture, follow us on DroneU, on Twitter at TheDroneU, on Instagram at TheDroneU, and find us on Facebook at TheDroneU. My name is Paul Aiken, and this is TheDroneU.